Today is the 1st of May, 2013. 36th day of the Omer, and we are about to begin. We're actually continuing the mitzvah of having chametz. We went through a very long description of the fact that chametz is representative of the Yetzer Hara. Just a disclaimer: these handouts are not essential. It's not crucial that you follow in the handouts. If you'd like to, it certainly would help, but you certainly don't need to in order to understand the shiur. So if you prefer them, you don't prefer them, do as you see fit. So we went through a discussion of the Yetzer Hara and how chametz is analogous to the Yetzer Hara. I don't know if I mentioned this, but one of my favorite analogies is the fact that chametz and the leavening agent, I mean, basically what it does is it takes some... What's the difference between... I always ask children, what's the difference between chametz and matzah? Besides for the letters, what's the difference practically in the makeup between chametz and matzah? They're both essentially the same material. It's flour and water, right? The only difference is that the leavening agent allows it to rise. What happens when it rises? It introduces little tiny air pockets, right? So basically, it's a bunch of hot air. No pun intended. What it basically does is it takes air, it softens it by way of making it rise, and it also makes it look better. Aside from the taste and the texture, it also makes it look better because now it's a nice loaf. Yeah, but essentially, in its very core, the ingredients are essentially the same. So the Yetzer Hara is the same way. He'll take something that is very plain, very simple, dresses it up, and talks you into the fact, we mentioned this several times, talks you into the fact that this is something desirable, right? It puffs it up, it makes it into something. It's like my children have a little toy. It's a little figure of a person. And you put on different hairdos, you know, you clip on different hairdos and it makes the person look very, very different. That's basically what it's all a farce. It's all charade. It's dressed up. It's not real. At its core, essentially, right, if you break down a lot of the foods that we are enticed to eat, if you really break it down and you look at the nutritional facts, you basically faint. But that's what it is. The Yetzer Hara entices you. This is the whole idea of marketing, the whole idea of, I mean, what is a car today? It used to be a car at some, today's a bunch of fiber. I mean, if you would open it up and you see, it's a soda can. That's what it is. It's a piece of junk. And they, you know, they make it aerodynamic and they paint it and it's beautiful and the whole business. And then, now I want to, it's like a house. You give it a new paint job. It's a new house. This is what the Yetzer Hara is about. It's not... As we mentioned, this was a big, big emphasis that we mentioned in the past. The Yetzer Hara does not overpower people with wisdom, with rationale. The Yetzer Hara overpowers a person, literally overpowers. He's the bully. He says, you're going to do what I want, and you're going to listen to me. So, as we mentioned, it's brute force. So we had several different analogies to the mitzvah of not eating chametz, etc., and one of them was the famous Gemara. We're about to start. The last source on page 20 is a Kli Yoker from Parshas Tzav. In Parshas Tzav, we read not too long ago, there it says, Lois of Echametz, you shall not bake it chametz. And there is the, he quotes the famous Gemara that Rabbi Alexandri said in the Gemara in Brachas. He said, we really want to, he used to say to the Rabbeinu Shalom, we really want to do your will, but who's preventing us? It's the Se'er Shebe'isa, the leavening agent in the dough, which, again, is analogous to the Yetzer Hara. But he didn't just say that. He said Se'er Shebe'isa and Shibud Malchus, which Reb Neil pointed out last week, that they go together. In Chazal, you find it often together, those two. The Se'er Shebe'isa, which is the Yetzer Hara, and the Shibud Malchus, the subservience to the authorities. So we'll see in a moment what that's about. But he points out a very interesting thing. There are two karbanas that are accompanied by chametz. Two offerings in the Beis HaMikdash that are accompanied by chametz, and we need to understand why. Chametz was never brought on the kol sa'ar v'chol dvash le'saktiru. It was never brought on the Mizbeach itself. And if we understand the analogy, the chametz is analogous to the Yitzhara, we understand why it's not brought on the Mizbeach. But in addition, he says there are two karbanas that were accompanied by loaves that were made out of chametz. One of them is something that's coming up on Shavuos. Why do we have the Shtei Alechem? The Shtei Alechem is actually made out of chametz. And the other one is? That's right, the Chalais Taida, correct. Some of the loaves of the Taida offering, and what is the explanation? So he gives two approaches. Approach number one is, he says here, and it's underlined, is because Shavuos is the day of Matan Torah. Even though it doesn't say those words in the Torah, that Shavuos is the day of Matan Torah, but we say it in the davenings, Man Matan Torah Seinu, right? Shavuos is the day of Matan Torah. So what? You know, there's a Gemara that says that on every Yom Tov, there's a question if you should have it dedicated to the Rebbeinu Shlom, have it dedicated to yourself. B'Shavuos, everybody agrees that you need Lachem. You also need not just Chatzil Hashem, you need Lachem. You need for yourself, you need to indulge, physically indulge in honor of the Yom Tov. Why is Shavuos any different than any other Yom Tov? So the Mefarshim say an unbelievable thing. Why did we get the Torah? How did we get the Torah? What was the winning argument of Moshe Rabbeinu? We know the Chazal, that Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shemayim, and the angel said, "What is this? A man of flesh and blood? What are you doing up here? This is not your neighborhood. How'd you get here? What do you think? He says, "I came to get the Torah." He says, "A Yelud Isha? What's a Yelud Isha doing here? A man of flesh and blood, born from a woman? What are you doing up in Shemayim?" So what did Moshe answer? So the Rebbeinu Shlom said, "Echayz bekisei kvaidi, grab onto my kisei hakavod, my throne of glory, and answer them." And what did he answer? If Neil says, he said, "Well, look at the Torah, kabbalas avicha vesimecha." He turned to the angel and said, "You have a father, you have a mother." He quoted several psukim where there are mitzvahs that pertain only to human beings. Obviously, the Torah was designed for a human being. While the Torah essentially is holiness, but it was made to help a human being, that is, that dichotomy, that partnership of the guf and the neshama, of the body and the soul, right? It was designed in order to help the human being elevate his body, right? But somebody that doesn't have that element, that body, is not, there's no purpose of the Torah. Torah lei b'shamayim hi. All right? Excellent. So what's the point? The point is, that's what the Torah was designed for, specifically for human beings. So the very frailty that we have, i.e. the fact that we have a side of us that is a body, that very frailty is precisely the reason why we need the Torah and what the Torah was designed for. So his response to the Malachim was, very nice, you guys may be much holier than we, but a human being has the ability. I mean, the human being, the Torah was designed for the human being. It's a manual for the human being to be able to elevate themselves beyond the Malachim. We can become even holier than the Malachim. You Malachim, you don't need the Torah. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's response. So says the Kli Yakar, beautiful thing, that's what he's saying here, the part that's underlined, that by Shtei HaLechem on Shavuos, specifically of all times, usually chametz, don't even accompany your offerings with chametz. But on Shavuos, precisely the day, which is Kabbalah Satera, ubetaina shol klum yesh yetzahara beinechem. The taina that Moshe Rabbeinu asked, do you even have a yetzahara among you? Moshe Rabbeinu asked that to the Malachim. You don't need the Torah. You don't even have a yetzahara. Ooh, so precisely on this day, the reason why we got the Torah was because we have a yetzahara. So the chametz, which is analogous to yetzahara, has to be in the karbonis, has to be in the accompanying the carbon, to show that this whole day of Kabbalah Sotera was only designed for us. Yes?
I mean, if I were an angel, I'd answer back to Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're going to, Chas v'Shem, you're going to die someday. Well, the Sadiqim, when you're up here, you know, obviously, there's going to be a Torah that's going to be Nageya to you. See what I'm saying? So I'm just wondering, how do we reconcile that?
I'm not sure I understand that.
Because what you're saying, which is obviously correct, is that the Torah is written for human beings. After a person dies, I mean, obviously, you know, all the great tzaddikim are going to still have access to the Torah, but obviously they don't have physical bodies, but you know.
Yeah, but it was designed for people who have gone through that process and have earned their... Again, at its very core, the Torah is Kedusha, is absolute holiness, for sure. But it's there to guide people who, at a certain point, are given an opportunity to be in this world for 80, 90, 100 years, hopefully 120 years, to be able to go through that obstacle course.
So we access it after.
We do. But the initial design, right? The initial design, right?
I see.
Okay, and the other is the Karban Todah. He points out, why the Karban Todah? Why does that have? It's a good question. If, in fact, chametz is analogous. This is a question, by the way, we asked this question last week. Drew asked the question, if I'm not mistaken. Why, if, in fact, chametz is analogous to the Yetzer Hara, why are we allowed to eat chametz at all, at any time? And, of course, we're going to see that the answer is very simple, because we're human beings. We need to have a main kemach in there. But there are certain times during the year that we need reminders. We need to go through a cleansing process for a finite period of time, and to teach ourselves that what do we really want to be eventually. After we go through this obstacle course, we really want to be at its entirely holy. We don't want to have this body. This body is only there to help us purify ourselves, to help us earn our Olam Haba. Correct. So, but as a human being, you cannot live without a Yetzer Hara. So the whole year round, we're going to have chametz. The whole year round, we're going to eat this thing, even though it is symbolic of Yetzer Hara, because the truth is that a whole year round we live with a Yetzer Hara. We're not denying that we have a Yetzer Hara. It's not a weakness that we have a Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is there for a purpose, to help us grow. And we'll see in a little bit that is very important. One of the messages, the fact that we eat it all year, is to be very aware of our Yetzer Hara. Yes? The Mishnah says, Al tamin ba'atzmecha yoy ma'ischa, don't trust yourself till the day you die. And the truth is, many, many great people have failed. They've lived entire lives of greatness, and at the end of their lives, they failed because they let their guard down. It's not a weakness to admit that you have a Yetzer Hara, that you have an inclination to do something bad. That's part of the makeup of a human being. That's the way the Rebbe Yisrael designed it. Unfortunately, people view it as a weakness, like the laws of Yichud. I always use this as an example. The laws of Yichud, don't go into seclusion with a member of the opposite gender, if they're forbidden to you, yes? Or not a close family member. What does that show you? That shows a weakness? Someone who keeps to the laws of Yichud, it's the only way to beat the Yetzer Hara. As we mentioned, the Yetzer Hara is sticking the foot in the door. The only way to beat the Yetzer Hara is don't let him in the first place. Don't go there in the first place. Why are you going there? Once you go there, you're going to be tempted. Then you're going to fail. It's like the drunk driver. Why do we prosecute the drunk driver? It's my fault. When I was driving, my senses were impaired. Of course, I ran him over. I didn't. You can't blame me. My mind was going bonkers, jumping off the walls. Why do you blame the guy? Why'd you go to sit down in the seat in the first place? Why didn't you give your keys over to the designated driver when you first started to drink? It's the initial, right? And that's the only way to conquer the Yetzer Hara, is to be aware of that challenge. Is it a weakness to admit that you have that challenge? Unfortunately, the world is viewed as a weakness when a person admits that they have an evil inclination. To the contrary, it's the greatest greatness. And that's the greatness of the laws of Yichud, is to recognize that no matter how old or how young, a human being has this challenge, and our only hope to overcome that challenge is don't climb up there in the first place, right? Okay. You know, so he says about the Karban Todah, he says here that a person who goes through Yisurim, who goes through strong challenges, he's already subdued. He's already more tame than a person who hasn't gone through difficulties. He's already more humble, right? There's a famous story with Rav Gifter. Rav Gifter was on a boat from Europe to United States. He ended up leaving Europe a couple of years or so before the great, unfortunately, the great destruction of the Second World War. In fact, he even sent for his, he was engaged. He went to Europe, he studied there in Europe from great, great people in the Tel Zer Yeshiva, and he got engaged to the daughter of one of the Rosh Yeshiva. He came back to America. They sensed that some, you know, danger was looming. So he sent for his Kala. She came to America and was saved thereby. But he was on a boat a few months before his wife, his Kala, came over. She was eventually saved, and they raised, you know, a very large family. She's actually a teacher of my mother, this Rebbetzin Gifter. But in any case, Rabbi Mordechai Gifter was a teacher of my father. He was on the boat, and he often said over the story where there was a major storm. They were on the boat. It was a massive storm, and the boat was rocking from side to side. You know, Rabbi Steinberg's Rebbe, Rabbi Zelig Epstein, he was also on a boat that was caught in a storm, either during or before the Second World War. The way he described it, I remember I was at his home, and he described it. He said, it was such a storm. You know, we always tell over the story. Yeah, they went from this place by boat. Like, like they don't even mention, just, you know, an anecdote. They went from place to place. Sometimes on these trips, it was horrific. He said, he says he remembers one minute the boat was like this, and the floor of the top floor, where they call it the top floor of the boat, the deck. The deck was even with the water line. He said, and then a minute later, the other side of the deck was also even with the water line. Anyway, so Rabbi Gifter was on a boat. They were going through such a storm, but it was such a large ship. They actually had an orchestra, and they were dancing. They were dancing, you know, in a hall, like a social hall, you know. And as soon as this storm started, it became so frightening that they stopped the orchestra and they stopped the dancing. Not just because they couldn't keep their balance, but because no one was in the mood. A person's going through a life-threatening situation. You're not even thinking about having a good time or wasting your time. You're thinking about the more serious things, you know. What are you, you know, what's doing back home? What's going to be for the future? Are you going to live? Are you going to die? What can you do to save yourself? There's all sorts of important things to think about. You're not going to think about dancing. So he said, what made a great impression on him? He said, suddenly the storm subsided. And everything went back to normal. He said within minutes, the band set themselves up again, started playing, and everybody rushed into the room and started dancing again as if nothing happened. And he used to say all the time, you fools, you had a few moments of serious introspection. What are you letting it go to waste? Within a minute, you're back to normal as if nothing happened. But the point is that a person goes through upheaval in their lives and difficult situations, losses, whatever it might be, their hearts are more subdued. So basically, in his first approach, the Kliyakar trying to answer why we do have chametz in these two offerings, accompanying these two offerings, is because Shavuos, because that's the whole reason why we got the Torah, and the second carbon, which is the Todah, is because a person is in any case subdued from the fact that he went through difficulties. That's the Todah. The Todah is always brought for somebody who went through one of four situations, go through a desert, goes through a storm, goes sick, or he's in prison, whatever it might be, so he's already able to handle. So the first approach is basically like it's excusable that we should have the chametz is analogous to the Yetzirah, but it's understandable that we should have it. Then he gives a second approach. And he says, the Torah is brought for a person who goes through one of these four life-threatening situations. Yeah. Then he gives a different approach, and that is, again, recognizing that the chametz is analogous to the Yetzirah, but he says there's a difference between a Todah, someone who's bringing thanks for a miracle that happened, and person who is a chote, he does a sin. person who does a sin and brings an offering doesn't have to bring any chametz, because it really, a person who brings this offering is really bringing it voluntarily. He's admitting that he did a sin, and therefore he's bringing the offering. Someone who's at that point, he's already done tshuva, he's already sort of overcome the yetzahara that's within him. So he doesn't need the chametz to be there as a reminder that he has a yetzahara. And not so a person who goes through, again, this is a different approach than the first one, but a person who goes through a life-threatening situation and brings a carbon toda has to recognize that even though it's true that he's bringing an offering, but that was more involuntarily, he's still liable to have certain impurities of the heart and the yetzahara, and he has to be aware of that, and therefore, along with his carbon, he brings it along with some chametz. Again, the idea that despite the fact that a person goes through a life-threatening situation, he could easily revert back to his old ways, and a person needs a reminder for that. Okay, so that's one approach and with two different prongs, and that is that chametz is symbolic of the Yetzihara. The Kliyakar then has a second approach, B'derech Beis. It's two lines up in that piece. We're now on to page 21. The second line there, it says, B'derech Beis, in the second approach, he writes that matzah is symbolic of anava, of humility. Matzah is low down, yes? And why do we eat matzah on Pesach? Because we merited to have the geula, the redemption from Mitzrayim. Why? Because of anivus. Okay, so if in fact chametz, he's not saying that it's analogous to yetzahara, like the Gemara says, he's having a different approach. It's analogous to haughtiness, to arrogance, chametz. Okay, and therefore he says that's why the Rebbeinu Shalom tells us specifically to purge all our belongings and property from chametz, because and by the way, the Torah says, he mentions chametz is aser b'mashu, even with the smallest bit, is because if in fact chametz is analogous to gaiva, to haughtiness, so one has to remove from themselves. It says, as he mentions at the end of this paragraph from the Mishnah in Avos, me'oid me'oid have shval ruach, a person should very exceedingly be how would you translate these words? Not low in spirit, but humble. Very, very humble. A person should be exceedingly humble. Now, that doesn't mean to say that you should let people step all over you. If you look at the Rambam and Hilchos Deos, of course, he says a person has too much humility, he'll end up becoming depressed and end up becoming... It means a healthy dose of humility, with a recognition that you have so much more to accomplish, that there's so many other people in the world that could be greater than you. You know, one of the greatest people, the most humble people that existed in our times, was Reb Moshe Feinstein. He was known to be absolutely the most humble. Someone once told me a story that they were in Tiferes Yerushalayim, in the midst of Tiferes Yerushalayim, but in Reb Moshe Feinstein's yeshiva, and someone was calling his son, whose name was Moshe. He said, Moshe, come here, Moshe, or Moshe. And Reb Moshe, in his humility, just turned around like he thought somebody was calling him. Like, you know. But it didn't mean to say when someone's an anav that he doesn't know how great he is. If he knows, you know, what he's learned and what he's accomplished. And Reb Moshe, at certain times when people were out of their place, he would remind them. You know, there was one point where there was a certain young man that was speaking to him. This happened more than one occasion, apparently. But one time I know for sure he was speaking to somebody and the fellow was like really pestering him about a certain halacha and arguing with him and saying, what about this, what about this? And he wouldn't give up. So at a certain point, Reb Moshe felt it was, you know, it was already chutzpah. So he obviously felt it was for the better of the younger man. So he turned to him and he said, you know who you're arguing with? He said, I went through Shas, I don't know, 800 times and Shulchan Aruch with the Nisei Kelim, you know, 500 times. Like he mentioned, I don't know, like unbelievable numbers. I don't know what the exact numbers were, but he had no trouble when necessary saying what it was that he accomplished, because he wanted this person to understand. So Ma'id ma'id havashvaruch means to the degree that's healthy, but one should be as humble as humanly possible. So again, the second approach, we had the Yetzirah, now we have the idea of gaiva, of haughtiness, and that's the symbolic of the physical appearance of chametz, it's bloated, etc. And that's why one should not have any chametz whatsoever during the time of Pesach. I believe that on the last page, we don't have to go through it now, but if you have a chance, on the last page is a just in the back of your pamphlets is a piece that I wrote many years ago, and it had to do with this concept. And it mentions, if you look at the second paragraph, like sort of the middle, it brings down the Gemara in Brachas about Rabbi Alexandri and so on. And it just mentions here that the Gemara in Saita says that a person will only engage in sin if a spirit of folly enters him. I think we mentioned this. His tactics is that of deception. Right, so there's a whole discussion here, I guess, in the middle of the second paragraph. I'm not going to go through it now, but basically that's the one of the attacks he gets. All right, takes a, I see there, I forgot about this. I haven't read it in a while. But you take an automobile, you put an automobile. What is it? It's a bunch of... Yeah, a little essay there. Okay. Take a mechanically flawed automobile, dress it up with a shiny aerodynamic body, and you can bet it'll be a popular model. There are some of the nicest models out there, actually, one of the worst mechanically, their history mechanically. I don't have to tell you, Natan, do I? Okay. All right, so the same idea. So let's move on to the Svasemes, which is on page 21, the second piece here. And here, he says an interesting thing. He says that matzah is michla de azvasa. Michla is michel, is a food. Azvasa, what is azvasa? Of healing. It's a medicinal, it's a therapeutic food. Did you know that, Drew?
The matzah.
Yeah, did you know that it's therapeutic? I think the GIs among us will disagree. Well, that's one of the reasons, yes. But it's medicinal. It's also called Nama de Memnusa, the food of Emuna, right? There's many different things. But anyway, he says from the Zohar, very interesting thing he says from the Zohar, for all those of you who are scared of learning Kabbalah, like I am, here it says like this. Adam Arishain, sorry, the Chet Arishain, the first sin, was the Achilas Eitz Hadas, from the eating of the tree of knowledge, right? Now, what happened at that moment? Before then, Adam HaRishon was immortal. Is that correct? He would have lived forever. Yes? And we know that eventually that's what's going to happen, right? We're going to revert back to that. But what happened to Adam HaRishon? Why was he immortal? Because he was all ruach. He was all kedusha. He was all taiv. He was all goodness. And what happened at the time that he ate from the Eitz HaDa'as, so the Sasemis in the name of the Zohar tells us that there became a taruvais of toiv and ra, which he introduced the concept, the element of ra, of evil, into himself, and now it became a mixture. The svarim say that not only Adam HaRishon became a mixture, but we know that the actions of a human being have an effect on the surrounding, so that everything really has in it good and bad. And the Svarim explained that when a person eats, right, the truth is that everything in the world has, any plant life, anything, the truth is anything has in it an element of spirituality, and that's just from the fact that Baruch Sha'omar V'hoya Olam, the Rebbeinu Shlom wills that something be in existence, that in itself is the element, is the spark of Kedusha within it, aside from other things.
That's not just true of living, also like the...
Yeah, inanimate, right. Anything inanimate, right. Yeah. Anything in the world. But especially those things that are living have more elements of...
Right.
Okay, but he says like this. He says the job of a human being, the challenge of a human being in this world is to go through the world and lesaken hachelek shenit bagboy mitaru v'esaseh. Basically, our constant pursuit in this world is to fix the chait of Adam Rishon that he introduced ra into our system, and we have to purge that. Here he says from the Reply in Vital, okay, and that is Sa'ar Shabaisa. Basically, you have a flour, you have a mixture, a dough, and you introduce into it something that doesn't necessarily have to be there. That is analogous to the Yetzer Hara. Again, the same idea that we were saying before. However, he adds, very important, and this addresses what Reb Neil was saying last week, Umizeh bo kol ha-golos. From this comes all of Golos. In other words, the fact that we're in Golos, what are we in Golos? What are we in exile for? What's the point of the exile? It's a microcosm of Adam HaRishon being thrown out of Gan Eden. That's really, we're reliving that existence. In fact, when we were redeemed from Golos, the ultimate Geula, yeah, will go back to a life similar to that of Adam HaRishon Kaidem Achet, before he sinned. So basically, Golos, which was caused by introducing Ra, i.e. Chametz, into our system, is only there because of the fact that we did this sin. And therefore, our entire challenge and our entire hope through the Golos is to be able to work our ways back to rectify the sin of Adam HaRishon. So now we understand very well why when Chazal mentioned Sa'ar Shabaisa, which is a representative of the Yetzer Hara, we, in the same sentence, in the same breath, Chazal mentioned Shibud Malchus, the fact that we are subservient to other nations.
We yes. Say also that with the Egel, back to the pre-Egel state, because the Egel that we had already had achieved the state of Adam Rishon.
You are 100% right. You know what the Chazal say? People don't realize this. We're coming up to Shavuot. You know what Chazal say about the time that we received the Torah? You know what happened to the transformation that we had when we received the Torah? We could have, had we not sinned with the golden calf afterwards, we would have remained on such a level like Adam Rishon before the Chet. It says like this in the Torah. It says that the words were charus al haluchais. They were engraved into the luchais, into the stone. So Chazal tell us, don't just read the word charus, but cherus, freedom. There were a lot of freedoms that with the luchos, we received a lot of freedoms. And one of them was, very conveniently, cherus mimalach hamavos. So that when the Torah was given to us, it was such a gift, not just for the Torah intrinsically, but and together with it, we achieved such a high level that we would have been free from the Malach HaMavis. Very good. So you're saying good, Drew. We did get back to that point. Unfortunately, we sinned, and then we had to go back into an existence where we'd have to work our way back. But basically what he's saying here is that our entire work during Golos is to try to purify ourselves from that mixture that we introduced into our system by way of the sin of Adam HaRishon. And when we eat the matzah, when we eat the matzah on the days of Pesach, it's a reminder of that existence that we had Adam HaRishon before, and what we're really trying to work back towards. And the truth is that was the exercise of going through the Midbar. What happened to the Jewish people when they went through the Midbar? What did we eat? Man min hashamayim. The Gemara tells us when they ate man, it was so entirely spiritual that there was no byproduct. They would eat it, and there was no need to relieve themselves of any byproduct. Why? Because it was entirely spiritual through and through. What is that? That's an existence like Adam HaRishon before the Chet.
But the shot of the Sfatama seems to be equating Sa'ar Shabaisa with Sheba and Malchios, that they're not different, as usually explained, but they say one is caused by the other.
Yes, that's what I wanted to point out. That's what I wanted to point out with the Sfas Emes. One is the cause caused by the other, and that's why they're mentioned together. The Maral, just one more piece here. Maral asked that same question. Why is it that the Shtei Alechem on Shavuos is brought with Chametz? That's the third piece here on this page 21, yeah? So he says, because a Shlamim offering was to make Shalim. And he says, when the Rebbein Shem created us, he created us with the Yetzer Hara. And we have to recognize that the Yetzer Hara in itself has an element of good in it, in that it's there to help us grow, right? So, the ultimate goal is to take the Ra. I mean, the Nefesh HaChayim mentions this, that the Yetzer Hara itself is not an evil thing inherently. He's there for the purpose of helping us grow. He's like a personal trainer, right? So the ultimate goal is to use the Ra for Taif, right? So we need 7 days. We need 7 days to teach us this lesson that it's really, it's a bad thing. We have to distance ourselves. That's what we're working towards. But the real ultimate goal is, as human beings, is to use our physical bodies, our physical existence, and to elevate that. So this is the Maral I was referring to earlier. To avoid eating chametz an entire year is incorrect. That's not the existence that we, that realistically, we're living through an existence of dealing with this dual, right, two elements. So in order to really live in this world properly, we have to have some Sa'ar, we have to have some Yetzihara, we have to have some chametz. And that's why during the rest of the year we do. And that's why on Shavuos, we have it, because together with the Torah, he says at the end, Mizeh atam lahir chika Torah b'chag Shavuos haChametz, because he gave us a Yetzer Hara, and through it, we acquire Torah. You can't acquire Torah without a Yetzer Hara. Without the Yetzer Hara making it difficult for you to fulfill the Torah, you wouldn't be able to earn it. So the only way we acquire the Torah is he gives examples. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. If you don't have a desire for somebody else's physical property, how could you ever fulfill the mitzvah of Lei Sigzo? It's so undesirable for me. It's so not necessary for me that I don't have any need for his thing. So how can you ever fulfill that mitzvah? It's only because we have a Yetzer Hara for physical things. That's the way we acquire the Torah. So it's true, we have once a year, 7 days, or in Gullus we have 8 days. Maybe that's why we have 8 days in Gullus. We need a bigger lesson here in the Gullus, right? We have 7 days or 8 days to teach us what should be our ideal eventually. But right now in this world, we recognize that there's a need to live with the chametz, and that's the only way we could acquire the Torah. And therefore, we do not forbid, the Torah does not forbid us from eating chametz during the rest of the year. To the contrary, it's very fine to eat chametz. Ein kemach, ein Torah. If you don't eat properly, you don't have the energy to learn Torah. But at the same time, we also have to recognize what the ultimate goal is, and that's why we have Pesach to teach us what the ultimate relationship with Hashem will be, and that will be, of course, without the necessity of chametz.
Quick question.
Yes.
You know, you said to me about having a drive. Most of us sitting in this room, two of the Aseres Dibros, we don't have a desire to kill anybody or to commit adultery, and yet, you know, so how would we get scarf for those two?
That's a great question. The reason why you, Drew Dorman, do not have a drive to kill somebody or to commit adultery is because you've been sensitized to the fact that it's repulsive. Okay, but your Yetzer Hara inherently really had such a drive at a certain point. You worked on yourself. Either you were born into such a environment, or you were actually taught, or you were self-taught, or you worked on it to the point where you actually got to, that's a whole discussion in its own right. But really, essentially, Drew Dorman, deep down, would have been interested in murdering somebody else. Il mole meira shel malchus, the Mishnah says, if not for the fact that we're scared to do so, ishes reo chayim balay, a person would kill his friend. So inherently, that's really what you want to do. It's just you've sensitized yourself to how terrible it is, and therefore you shouldn't do it. And we spoke about this, by the way, at great length earlier. We spoke about the fact that the job of a person is to take the Torah and to make it his second nature. But you have to work on that. You can't just be born into that. You have to actually make it your second nature. That is your ultimate goal, because that's the way you want to be eventually. But we have to be realistic and recognize. Yes. Okay, excellent.